Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at home improvement on the show and talk a bit about focusing on switching maybe from natural gas to electric with our two guests. One of them with me in the studio, Chad Spate, back with us. He's the owner of Chad's Design Build. And Chad, good to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. It's always great to be here.
Kevin Kane is our other guest today. Kevin is the chief economist and co-founder of Green Homeowners United in Milwaukee. And Kevin, welcome to you. Thank you for joining us.
Morning, Larry. Happy to be here.
So as we talk with these two experts, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've changed to electric. Are you happy with that decision? What questions do you have about home improvement? We can certainly answer those as we move along as well. Easy to do. Just give us a call at 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Kevin, let's start with you. Tell us about your business, Green Homeowners United.
Green Homeowners United was founded to help make it easier for people to figure out how can I upgrade my home right now. If it's true that upgrading homes to be energy efficient is one of the most important ways to cut carbon emissions, I think the biggest question people have is, where do I start? And so we help people, whether they're trying to figure out what makes sense using things like energy assessments or even how to pay for it, guiding people through rebates and tax credits and fair financing and even something called green mortgages. And we try to make it so people can be rewarded for helping the planet.
It's a great business. Are you busy, by the way?
We are, and it looks like things are going to grow even more with the Inflation Reduction Act.
Okay. Well, Chad, why are homeowners switching out natural gas for electric?
Yeah, there are a variety of reasons. I mean, one is health. We don't necessarily think about it, but natural gas for a stovetop, there's some carbon monoxide there and a little bit of an odor. And, if you have good ventilation, it can be a perfectly safe way to have a stove. But, it's in a home. A modern home is very tight. And that's a good thing for being able to control the climate and make sure that we have fresh air. But then we have to have fresh air, and not all homes have good fresh air and or good ventilation to get out that carbon monoxide. And then there are the environmental reasons. The natural gas we think of as kind of a bridge fuel. It's not as damaging, say, as using coal. Things like that to power.
Fuel oil?
Right. I mean, yeah, fuel oil, again, more polluting, more of a negative impact with respect to carbon emissions. But natural gas is something that just helps bridge the transition to truly clean energy. And we already have these amazing appliances that allow us now, for example, to put in a heat pump in Wisconsin and be able to effectively heat our buildings with an all-electric appliance. And that technology has come a long way in my lifetime. And so, if the power that is being generated, the electricity that is then powering these electric appliances is cleaner and greener, then it truly is closing the loop. So if you have a solar PV, either at the power plant level or on your individual home, these are ways that you can then generate the power cleanly and then provide fuel for cooking and heating your home. And, of course, heating water as well.
Yeah. So, and Kevin, you've been nodding in agreement on this. Anything to add to that?
Well, we like to say that you can make electricity green with hydro, with wind or solar panels on your own home. You can never truly make gas fully green. And so as we're starting to get our electric grid is getting greener and greener, the goal of utilities like We Energies is to get to 100% renewable over time. We have to start switching to these electric appliances to make that happen. And it's been very common in other parts of the country for these things called heat pumps, heat pump water heaters, heat pump to replace air conditioners. But, you know, our listeners, our friends and families probably don't hear much about heat pumps or haven't, but they're not that uncommon, and you're going to hear a lot more about them.
Hmm. I have a geothermal unit in my home with actually the backup is natural gas on that.
Yep, that's
about
common.
10 years ago that we put that in. And so that's something you guys deal with, Kevin.
Yeah, we see this pretty frequently. In Wisconsin, they do recommend you have what you have, Larry, a what they call a dual fuel system, where at some temperature, it might be 30 degrees, it might be negative 17 degrees, you switch away from the heat pump and you use kind of a gas model. I mean, we have those polar vortex months or periods in time, and it's nice to know you have that backup. But at some level, you're really not using a furnace or even a boiler at all. And whether you're heating or cooling your home, this heat pump can make it happen. And if you have solar, that means that solar panels are powering to space heat your place.
So are there electric heating systems or which kinds of electric heating systems are typically recommended? Or am I asking the right question here, Chad?
Yeah, well, so, you know, Kevin just made an important point that the technology does have its limitations.
Yeah.
And we're still in Wisconsin pretty much putting in these dual fuel systems. But the point is, how are we providing, first and foremost, efficient power? And the heat pump is a very efficient appliance. Yet we also have gas furnaces that are 96% efficient, but they are burning natural gas. And again, it's for both a combination of safety, and because the fumes, I mean, when we do a, home performance energy audit in our client's home, one of the things we're looking at is the potential for backdrafting on any natural gas or fuel burning appliance, you know, where that carbon monoxide can become a health threat to occupants in the home. And we do occasionally see it where an older home has a ventilation system that is not adequate based on what has changed with the home. You know, we're making homes tighter as we renovate them, as we try to make them more comfortable and energy efficient. And the old hot water heaters and furnaces that just took combustion air from that basement or from the home, those are in danger of backdrafting after you've made energy insulation improvements. Yeah. So you don't have those concerns with an all-electric appliance. And so that's why people are increasingly looking at it.
Yeah. Eugene in Viola has a question relating to this, so let's go there. Eugene, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
I've got an artesian well beside the back porch, and the pipe sits high enough so that it doesn't flow. Now, the artesian water stands at 37 degrees. Can you use that for a heat pump?
So he's got an artesian well, and the water stays at 37 degrees, I think he said. Can that be used as a heat pump? Probably not. Or I don't know.
Don't know.
I would say that we probably want to talk to a heating expert who focuses more on geothermal on that. I mean, what you're going to hear more and more is these air source heat pumps where you're kind of replacing an outdoor air conditioner than you will geothermal. If you have natural gas right now, it's a lot harder to switch to geothermal and save a tremendous amount of money versus, say, you're on fuel oil or propane or electric heat. But it is something that is worth looking into.
So who would Eugene talk to?
He can call us at the Green Homeowners United, where we know a number of geothermal experts around the state, depending on where he is.
All right.
Viola.
So you can go to Green Homeowners United online, Eugene, and take a look there, and you're going to find ways to contact everybody and learn who else to contact. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. Kevin, I think it was you that mentioned the or maybe it was Chad, the Inflation Reduction Act. You want to talk about, Kevin, maybe go to you, that because that includes some incentives for homeowners if they switch to electric.
This is going to be the main reason why people are going to be hearing more and more about these heat pump ideas. And heat pumps are fascinating pieces of technology. As Chad mentioned, your furnace might be 90 or 96% efficient, meaning that 4 to 10% of it is wasted out of the house of the energy that's burned. A heat pump could be 2 to 300% efficient. So it's creating more energy than necessarily what's being put in because it moves it. It doesn't just burn fuel in quite the same way. It's a very efficient device that has been around for decades, although different versions of it, as Chad said, that they've gotten better and better over time. So the Inflation Reduction Act is really helping make it possible for more and more people to install them. Depending on someone's income, you will soon be eligible for instant rebates, such as those who you might have worked with Focus on Energy for light bulbs or insulation around the state. You get these instant rebates that can immediately offset the bill. You will see the same thing with these heat pumps. And so when the next time your air conditioner goes out, or you're thinking of doing an upgrade, or even expanding a part of your house that you didn't have heating ducts now and you want to figure out a better way to heat and cool it, these heat pumps can be available whether it's for just one zone of the home or the entire house. For example, if you make under what's called 80% of the annual median income, you can get an $8,000 immediate rebate off the cost of a new heat pump. But even if you make $400,000 a year, there'll still be incentives for you to do this, such as a new federal tax credit of up to $2,000 starting January 1st.
So lots of opportunities when it comes to incentives, for sure. Jim in Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Larry.
Hi.
I'm enjoying your show this morning. We went to an induction cooktop 8 years ago, and it is just the best thing we've ever done in the house. There's no excess heat that's given off by the stove when you're cooking. If you spill, you can clean it up immediately because the cooktop isn't warm. There's almost an infinite number of temperature controls on the stovetop. I can boil water faster than my friends who have gas stoves. It's just wonderful. Wonderful system.
Mm.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jim. I had made a note here that I wanted to talk about induction today because I agree. I installed an induction cooktop in my own home a little over a year ago, and I love it so much. The only downside is that having a glass top on it, you do have to be careful not to scratch it. And I'm one of those cooks that likes to kind of jiggle my my frying pan on top of it. You have to lift it when you're doing that. But, an induction cooktop is a fascinating technology. It's essentially using a rotating magnet to create, to heat up the metal, the iron, in your pot or pan. And so you can't use aluminum pans, and there's some other types of alloys that are not appropriate for an induction cooktop. But if you have the right cookware, it truly is amazing. And, of course, the cookware gets very hot. But Jim is correct. If you remove the cookware and wait a few seconds, you know, you can put your hand right down on that, and it has no heat there. So there's a little residual heat right as you take the pan off. But it's, by and large, a very safe cooktop and very fast and efficient.
Yeah, you like them too, Kevin?
I do, and in fact, I would say that as we're trying to get off of gas, I have heard from cooks who are a little loath to get away from their natural gas stoves, and I think that Chad and the caller might agree that induction stoves are not like the old electric stove experiences, but additionally, there are going to be instant rebates also in the Inflation Reduction Act for these. Up to $840 per stove.
Ooh. So they're a bit more, are they a bit more expensive then?
They do tend to be a little bit more expensive. I mean, but it all depends on
if you're getting up to an $800 rebate out of that, that would certainly even the cost out.
It helps absolutely
considerably.
Yeah,
Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate the call. And you can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. We've been talking home improvement on the show today. And certainly we zeroed in on the move to electric homes. But we'll take your other home improvement questions as well. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking home improvement on the show today with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Kevin Kane, chief economist and co-founder of Green Homeowners United. It works out of Milwaukee. Great to have both of them with us. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Mary in Black River Falls. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. A couple of years ago, my husband and I looked at putting solar in, and even with the rebates at that time, we would never, ever get our money back. And we were actually told to wait until battery storage was improved. Is there any improvement in that?
Yeah, I think there's been some big improvements. Kevin, you want to start on that?
Sure. So, yeah, I would say that most people in Wisconsin who are getting solar panels don't necessarily get a battery, but in many parts of the state, it can make a lot of help or a lot of support. The parts that make the most sense are if you're maybe in more of a rural area or area where you might lose power more frequently. Or in some areas, it makes sense if you can't sell the excess power back to the grid as easily. Some utilities have different rules. Then it does make sense to bank that power into a battery. Additionally, in some parts of the country and in some parts of Wisconsin, you can what they call kind of arbitrage the power, where you can charge you can be charged more for electric at certain times of the day and less at other times of the day. And with a battery, you can charge it or use it to take advantage of those differences in rates. It's usually called time of use plans. Batteries are going to become more common. I personally don't have one on my solar system, but I do know others that do. And starting, I believe, I'm going to go off memory here, in 2024, they will be included with the federal tax credit, just like solar panels themselves are. So you're going to start seeing batteries a lot more common. We have heard from installers that I want to say something like 1 out of 4 solar installations now, people are choosing batteries as well. So you're going to start to see them. And even though I don't, I'm thinking of getting one myself.
Yeah. Chad, anything to add there?
Yeah. So I wanted to just mention to our listeners, because we actually talked about solar last month or 2 months ago on the show. The Inflation Reduction Act has restored the full 30% solar credit for the next, do you know, Kevin, how many years it is? Is it a 10-year extension or 5-year extension?
Yes, I believe until 2032.
Okay, yeah, so a 10-year extension. And that's really great news because we were sunsetting that extension here. It had dropped to 24% this year, and it was going to drop again next year. But now we're back to 30%. And to address the caller's concern about payback, what we are seeing for systems, both the one that I put on my own office building and for some of our clients, it's pretty easy to get a 10-year payback on these systems when you factor in a 30% credit and some other incentives that are out there. The fact that the cost of these panels has come down considerably over the last 10 years, all of these factors are making it very attractive for people to consider. But the one variable that is unique to any given property is, you know, how good of a site do you have? Is your roof a good spot for the solar panels? Maybe it isn't. Maybe they need to be placed, on a pole out in the yard somewhere where you've got good sunlight. You know, some people will pay to put in a tracking system so that they're collecting more power, but then they're having to operate that little motor that's going to track the sun. So, you know, these are all variables that play into and impact payback. But I think the numbers look pretty good right now for many people.
There you go, Mary. Thank you so much. Time to take another look at that system. Maddie in Fond du Lac. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Hey, my husband just passed over, so I'm not going to be able to do this work myself. But I want to hire somebody to go over the whole house and do caulking around the windows and, you know, weather stripping and the whole thing. Is that also tax deductible?
There are some advantages. I think you probably need a home energy audit, or maybe I'm wrong. Would you agree with that, Kevin?
I would say that to do the biggest impact on saving your home's energy, on heat loss, on air leakage, have a professional energy assessment and maybe professional contractors. Because while we hear it a lot, or feel it a lot, excuse me, by windows, by doors, the biggest issues by far tend to be in the attic and the basement or crawl space. I've seen holes that I can fit through, and I am not a small man. That being said, you can do it along windows and doors and things of that nature, that you can get weather stripping or caulk. And while there is a very, very small federal tax credit today, there will be an higher one slightly in January that is good for both doing it yourself or hiring someone else to do it too. But there will be additional rebates for professionals to come in, do energy assessing, and seal those gaps.
So companies like you do that, you're probably listed in the Focus on Energy, I would guess, and that's a good place to go for a list of names of people in your area who are capable of doing that, a good professional job, or they wouldn't be listed on the Focus on Energy website. So I would strongly urge you to go there and then look in your neighbor. You know, you'll see there in Fond du Lac area, there's going to be companies that will, individuals even, who will come in and do a good job. And then you'll know exactly what you need to have done. Right, Chad?
Correct, yeah. And so not only are there these federal tax credits, but then Focus has its own incentive plan. And, you know, so it's really useful and worth the money to pay for that home assessment as you're planning for the project, because it more than pays for itself to have it done right.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck with that. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dell in Fond du Lac County, your turn. Hi.
Two questions. Would you mention windmills? And what about what is this Focus on Energy? What does it cost? What does it cost?
Sure.
Yeah, well, so, you know, certainly there is potential for some homeowners to be able to utilize, you know, windmills or to take advantage of the wind. I mean, there are some devices that are appropriate in a more,
urban setting, maybe.
Yeah, there are some urban windmills, you know, that they look like
they look like
a pole, like a barbershop pole or something, and they you know, they catch the wind. And it's certainly possible to go that path. It's just not as readily available and kind of accepted as the solar panels are right now. And there are a variety of reasons for that. I mean, there are some zoning restrictions, I think, that are more common with windmills that you won't necessarily encounter with solar. But to speak to Focus on Energy and what that is, Focus on Energy is a unique program that I'm very proud that we have here in the state of Wisconsin. It is something that was a model. It was created back around the year 2000, and it is a model for other states around the country, because basically we all pay our utility bill a small fee or tax that goes to the Focus on Energy program. And then Focus on Energy takes that money and helps homeowners and businesses to figure out ways to effectively improve the efficiency of the buildings that are using that power. So it's the way that the utilities and lawmakers decided, you know, how are we going to incentivize and help to fund energy efficiency improvements? So that's kind of a simple overview of it. So money goes into that program, and then the program basically certifies energy auditors to go out and do these home performance assessments. And those assessments use scientific tools, you know, blower doors and infrared imaging and carbon monoxide detectors to determine, is the house operating as efficiently as it should? What are the opportunities for improvement? What do we recommend as a, you know, professional that has just assessed the home? And then there's some rebates that are offered for particular, solutions that might be recommended, like blowing insulation into wall cavities that are not properly insulated, doing proper air sealing in the attic and walls and down in the basement. So a variety of things that are prescriptive, but they will say, if you do this, we will give you this amount of money as an incentive and a reward. And then on top of that, of course, you're going to save money on your utility bill. So I've always described it as kind of a professional gatekeeper. We have to hire the home performance auditor to do the assessment, and then you have access to good information and to some rebates if you do the things that are suggested.
Yeah. And usually, if you say, well, gee, I can't spend all that money right now, the energy audit, I've had a couple done on two different homes, they give you sort of an ordering this, I do this first, if you can't do it all, then this second, then this third.
Correct.
And so it's a very good state-run program that, Dell, you're going to be very happy if you take advantage of it. I'm pretty sure of that.
Definitely.
And thanks a lot for calling. It's good to get that, we talk about the a Focus on Energy program and a lot, and we kind of forget that, well, some people are new to it and need to be reminded. So nice job of explaining how that all works.
You bet.
Chris in Sun Prairie. Hi, Chris.
Hi. My question is, we have an old fuel oil furnace at the moment. We're ready to upgrade. I'm interested in getting a dual fuel gas heat pump system. But what I want to know is, do I need to buy both of these things at once, say from the same brand, the gas and the heat pump, or can I do this in phases? Or could I even get the heat pump and use that with my existing old furnace and then upgrade to a gas later on? Just kind of wondering how this can be done.
That's good questions. Kevin, I'll start with you.
So I would say that a lot of times you can keep the existing heating system, although it is something that I, again, would recommend both for the planet as well as your power bills to look at a different method. The dual fuel system, there are a few times where, a specific upgrade can both be fantastic for your pocketbook, fantastic for the planet and all the rest of that stuff. And moving from heating fuel or propane or electric heat to a heat pump for the majority of your heating and cooling is one of those opportunities. It is a fantastic money saver most of the time. I do know people who say, well, I might want to wait until my fuel oil tank is empty, and we'll say, no, it might make sense to do the heat pump sooner, especially if you already have refrigerant lines hooked up. Your heating expert will kind of help you determine if that actually is a feasible option. And then that way you can, if you'd like, still use the fuel oil without having to replace it. But it can make sense if you have natural gas to use that as the predominant backup. But it does make a ton of sense to look at heat pumps for most of your heating if you are relying on fuel oil today.
Ah, there you go, Chris. Thank you. Joshua in Mauston, on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for having me. My question is about the solar power. I got a call, it was a while ago, but this company that was going to basically put solar panels on my property, and I guess it's kind of like a loan, and I pay them back over the years, and then they kind of go whatever you pay for your electric, you know, like say you pay $150 a month, they do that, that's what you pay them, and then after like 20 years, you own them. I don't know if you ever heard of anything like that, and is it just better to buy the solar panels outright?
Yeah, good question. Kevin, you start with you, and then we'll get Chad in.
I would say that you're probably, from what I'm hearing, it sounds like you're dealing with something called like a solar leasing program where you're sort of leasing the solar panels, but they're owned by someone else. In Wisconsin right now, that is kind of a legal gray area. And in certain parts of the state, it may be allowed. Where I live in southeastern Wisconsin, they strongly discourage that. It is a very powerful way in states like Iowa and Illinois and Colorado and Minnesota to make it so more people can get on solar very fast. But here in Wisconsin, I haven't checked the news recently, but I understand that the Public Service Commission is still going to be weighing in on the legality or the opportunity to do that under Wisconsin law. So I would say that it's not a huge opportunity for a lot of people today, unless the rules changed on me recently. I would say that owning the solar is helpful because that's how you can get the federal tax credit that, as Chad mentioned, is now 30% of the total installation. So when I paid my solar panels, I got a nice $4,500 federal tax credit down the line, which helped me pay for my next home improvement thing, you know, because there's always another thing to do in the home.
Yeah. Chad, anything to add there?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, as with most things, buyer beware. I think, as Kevin suggests, it is a way to do things that can be very helpful to some homeowners, but I don't think it's quite ready for prime time in Wisconsin. But there are some programs similar to what have become popular in other states, as Kevin suggests, we're starting to see emerge. And it's almost like leasing something as opposed to buying it.
Yeah.
But you have to kind of look at the whole financial picture, because I don't think you get to take the tax credit when you're leasing something.
Yeah.
And that's definitely going to change the numbers. But if it allows you to do it, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, you know, you're paying your utility bill anyway. So better to be paying to have the solar power, if in fact you're going to have uninterrupted power and you're going to be connected to the grid still. You know, these are all important things to understand about, you know, any sort of program like that.
Joshua,
I'll add to that.
Yeah, go ahead,
Kevin. Just that leasing is one option, but financing is another, where you actually own it. And there's a number of programs out there that can help you buy it, but pay it off over time from the savings on it. So Summit Credit Union has a solar program in Milwaukee. Other entities like Green Penny or Associated Bank have something called the Green Mortgage, where people can get them rolled in but not have to pay the full cost today. And that is a great option to still get the rebate, or excuse me, the tax credit, but then also not have to pay the full cost today.
Oh,
yeah, definitely.
Good addition. Yeah, that's something to think about, Joshua. Thank you very much for calling. By the way, Kevin, then what does Joshua or anybody else do if you on this financing side? How do you find where to go if you're he's in Boston, so it's different from there than it is in Milwaukee.
It's true. And there's a number of programs that are out there. Some contractors have their own connection to financing. A number of mortgage lenders or other lenders can help you with like a home equity loan or a green mortgage. A number of lenders offer that, where they can roll it into when you're buying or refinancing. But I would say that, as Chad has shared, a lot of times energy assessors like myself, my team, and those that Chad has are able to navigate people through the various programs. It's more than just saying, let's insulate your walls before we replace your windows. It could also be, here are the tax credits, here are the rebates, and here are your fair financing options in your area. So everyone can do something. Let's figure out what you can do in your home affordably today or within the next 5 or 10 years.
All right. Thank you again for calling. Let's go to Tony in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Tony.
Good morning, Larry. Great show. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I think there's some misinformation that people may or may not realize about the electric grid, that from what I understand, it's really only about 15% efficient when you measure all the inputs versus power sold. 85% is lost in generation and transmission, and that's not the same for natural gas, because if that were the case, we would have gas leaks all over the country. And I think if a person is going to convert from fossil fuel to an electric heat pump, they best better be generating their own power, because increasing your power consumption from the grid may actually be doing more injury to the environment, because if you have a high efficiency condensing furnace, maybe less invasive to the environment than if you bought a heat pump and bought your power. Now, if you generate your own power, then that's a whole different story. I'd like to get your guest's opinion on that.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You're raising some good points. Kevin, I'm sure you've heard this before.
We have, and it's a real question, real concern. The question, of course, is what is the best way to cut emissions from the residential commercial sector? And this is a real question. I mean, yes, an 80% efficient furnace might lose a bunch of energy up your chimney, but power lines might also lose some in the transportation of the electricity too. So overall, heat pumps, even though our electric grid here in Wisconsin maybe uses more coal or more natural gas or even more nuclear than maybe the national grid overall, we use less renewables than other states. Even with that in mind, a heat pump can be less carbon emitting overall in light of all that because of how efficient it is. Again, 200 to 300%, in some cases, geothermal is even more. But I agree, if you have the opportunity to source your electricity locally, like solar panels on your roof, that is arguably one of the best ways to have a positive impact. But it's a real concern about our electric grid, because as we're switching to electric cars, electric heat pumps, electric water heaters, induction stoves, it's something that we'll have to pay more attention to. And I think utilities are really seeing that this is happening, with or without them, and more and more are going with it.
Chad, a comment?
Yeah, there's some really good articles out there right now looking at the state of California, because, you know, California is a leader in pushing its citizens to more responsible production of electricity. But, you know, I'm sure most people have heard, you know, recently they announced that all cars will be electric, you know, no more combustion engines here in the very near future. And so, you know, the point was made that, well, there's going to be even greater demand on the electrical grid to now power all of these vehicles and then the heat pumps and everything else. And of course, these are unintended consequences of the shifts that we're talking about. But as we do have more people putting the solar panels on their rooftops, where they are becoming part of the power creation side of the equation, and then the utility becomes more of a distributor of power as opposed to a producer of the power at the, you know, plant. At the power plant, like if every home is a little mini plant, then the utility is just kind of shifting that power around to make sure that the lights stay on. So these are big picture policy questions, and the caller is asking a great question to that point.
So. Absolutely. Tony, thank you so much for bringing that up. I really appreciate it. Talking home improvement today with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Kevin Kane. Kevin's the chief economist and co-founder of Green Homeowners United. They're located in Milwaukee. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're talking home improvement on the show. I'm Larry Mueller. My guests are Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Kevin Kane, chief economist and co-founder of Green Homeowners United in Milwaukee. Some emails to go through. Let's do that. Pat emailed, his 100-plus-year-old house is equipped with inefficient old electric baseboard heaters to supplement the lack of a, you know, sort of a central system, HVAC system. Are there any efficient options or replacements to his older home? Kevin, any comments there?
Sure. So electric baseboard heat is probably – it's very efficient in that when you create electricity or use electricity to make the heat, it converts the heat very efficiently. But that doesn't mean that it's cheap. And in fact, it's one of the more expensive methods of heating your home. And so when given the opportunity, old homes are some of the best opportunities to save money by upgrading, reducing your utility bill. But if you're mostly relying on electric baseboard heat, you may not have as much in the way of ductwork for furnace, for a new furnace or a heat pump or an air conditioner. So what you might want to look at instead is something called a ductless or mini split heat pump, which can go through the wall like a wall mounted air conditioner and heat or cool the home in that area without having to necessarily put ductwork. And it's also great for areas that don't currently have it, an extension, an attic that you're finishing. It's another way to heat and cool the home besides just one that's built into a ductwork system.
Yeah. Chad, anything there?
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. So
there we go. Barb emailed. She has a very flat pitch to her roof and requires roof raking to prevent ice damage. She has lots of things sticking out of the roof, you know, the fireplace chimney, the bathroom vent, the electrical mast and furnace vent. And she's wondering, would a metal roof be better than her current asphalt shingles?
Hmm. Well, so that's a great question. You still have to make sure that what's underneath that primary roof is the right underlayment for a low pitch roof. And if it's purely a matter of upgrading the roof, I mean, a lot of times a metal roof is not really, there are challenges with a flat roof in Wisconsin. Let's just put it that way.
This one is not totally flat.
Right. A little bit of a pitch. And so, you know, you don't have to worry as much about damaging it when you're raking a metal roof. And yet, you know, we're always looking at things like this. I mean, sometimes the answer might be to create a little bit better roof line as part of the solution. And then there are better opportunities for proper insulation as well as making sure that the water gets off. But it could be that a metal roof is a good upgrade in the circumstance, and it's specific to the home. So,
Carrie wonders if there are incentives with the Inflation Reduction Act when purchasing an energy-efficient refrigerator, perhaps a stove other than induction. She knows it works for induction, but an energy-efficient stove of some sort or a dishwasher.
So while appliances do come in Energy Star models that can be shown to save on your utility bills, on your electric and the like, some things are specifically written in, tax credits and rebates for things like insulation and windows and things of that nature. Appliances, the only specific ones are HVAC appliances or induction oven stoves or heat pump dryers even. However, there is one way in theory to do this. We're still waiting on some of the details to come forward, but there are new rebates that come about from the Inflation Reduction Act if you get an energy assessment of your home. And actually now getting an energy assessment of your home can qualify you on its own for an up to $150 federal tax credit. But if you have an energy assessment and it shows you how you could reduce your utility bills by 20% or more, you can get $2,000 or even some case $4,000, or if you're moderate income, up to $8,000 off of whatever improvement the energy assessor shows, whatever combination, can reduce your collective utility bills to accomplish that goal. So if you say you want to do a refrigerator and others, that may be possible, but I'm also probably going to need to see your attic and basement and the like. But it can, in theory, be rolled into a package of improvements to make your home as efficient as possible.
There you go. Gail in Madison emailed that she heard that if you have a heat pump, you also need to have a second source of heat for a house. Is that true? And what other sources are recommended?
So, yes, you don't necessarily, but Chad, why don't you take that?
Yeah, well, so and this is where we've been talking about dual fuel heat pumps, because sometimes it's just too cold in Wisconsin for that technology to function properly and to bring the heat up as it needs to in the building. And so then we're looking at supplemental systems. You know, it might be the baseboard heat that we were talking about earlier, which we know is not a very efficient heat, but it still is keeping it electric. And if you have older systems in place that still function, but they're not very efficient, they can be your backup.
Yeah, it's a way to do it. Yeah. George in West Allis emailed. He understands the Inflation Reduction Act has a ton of money coming sometime in 2023, but he also heard a lot of neighborhoods and cities also have funding now that we don't have to wait for. And is that true?
Yes, there will be different programs that are available depending on where you live. And that's one of the things that we can help people kind of navigate. For example, in certain neighborhoods of Milwaukee, there are programs such as called the Neighborhood Improvement Districts, which can help people pay for home improvements. In places like Waukesha County, they use things, community development block grants, to help moderate income, especially seniors and people with disabilities, get affordable, often 0% interest loans for improvements. And elsewhere, the bipartisan infrastructure law that passed some time ago will be providing funds to local communities on top of what's happening with the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's a big, big effort to make buildings and especially homes energy efficient. And so don't just assume that what you're hearing today is the only thing that's going to happen. Many local communities, whether it's Dane County or even in Wausau, are doing different things to try to make it as possible to upgrade your home.
Mm. Yeah. And I would add to that that, you know, call your municipality, reach out to them and see if they can lead you towards certain programs. I mean, I would add that the city of Monona has a program to help residents with some home improvements. And, you know, it's some grant money that's sitting there and the city manages it. And
yeah, why not use it?
You wouldn't know about it unless you asked. So,
Richard in Manitowoc will give you a chance. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I went in to look at an induction range the other day, and the salesman had no idea of the credit that may be available through the Inflation Reduction Act. And I tried calling around to find out who I would contact about that, and I just reached a dead end. Do you know where I go to contact somebody about the tax credit or energy credit for getting an induction range? They want to eliminate the liquid propane, I guess, which is one of the things that for the environment that they're, you know, asking people to switch over for.
So I have good news and bad news for you. There are going to be those immediate rebates that immediately take the cost down up to $840. And depending on someone's income, they may get that full amount. They may get less than that. It's something that we're figuring out. The bad news is, again, this law only passed a few weeks ago. And so we have been in conversation with the state of Wisconsin. It will be managed here at the state level. However, the Department of Energy still needs the plan of what their rules are. The state of Wisconsin still needs to submit their plan for how they will provide these rebates, and then they will make them available to people. So we are kind of in the same boat you are, very optimistically waiting to hear. But I would say that we don't yet know what they are or if they're going to be retroactive. According to the rule of the law, we're eligible for all this today, but we're still not sure when they will happen. So we would anticipate sometime next year, but so hopefully not that long. We do know that the tax credits for most of these things, if it's solar, it's now. If it's energy efficiency, it starts January 1.
There you go, Richard. Thank you so much. Andrea emailed, they're trying to replace a wood-burning stove with another heat option in a lower-level apartment. It's fairly small apartment, 700 square feet. Currently looking at either mini-split or ETS. ETS seems a more economical option. Is there anything else they should consider, anything they can do without adding to the electrical panel?
I would say that so ETS usually refers to thermal storage, and it's about trying to figure out different ways to maybe take advantage of different heating bills, electric bills at different times of the day, or trying to find ways to they even have things called passive solar, which is about designing the home to take advantage of the sun or lose less heat to try to heat the home. If you are trying to switch away from the existing heating system, maybe wood burner, I would maybe encourage people to look at a mini split heat pump, because it has the added benefit of being able to also cool the home too. So you can both cool parts of the home and heat it. It's very efficient. It may impact your electric use. But the good news is there are also rebates for many people and tax credits to upgrade their electrical service or even rewire parts of the home, which is great news for old homes with old wiring such as knob and tube. So while, again, we're putting a lot more on the electric grid, there are resources to help make it so we can afford a lot easier to do that.
Yeah. Anything to add, Chad?
No, that's what I would recommend.
All right. I tell you what, we are coming up to the top of the hour here. Just a reminder, you can join in with your questions as well. And the number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Some good questions, and we haven't gotten to all of them, but we will. Chad Spade is our guest, one of our guests, owner of Chad's Design Build. Kevin Kane is the chief economist and co-founder of Green Homeowners United in Milwaukee. And they will be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look now at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with our guests. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking home improvement on the show today, Larry Mueller here for the Ideas Network. Our guests, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build, and Kevin Kane, chief economist and co-founder of Green Homeowners United. He works out of Milwaukee, and Chad, of course, his business is housed in Monona, but also, of course, works Madison and the area as well, the Madison area. Lots of callers online and lots of questions. So let's go to Jared in Bedford to begin this segment. Hi, Jared.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Good. So I just moved here from California, and I've been here for about 3 months. And previously in California for the last 25 years, I was what they call a HERS rater. And basically what we are in California were was a home energy rating system, but we also did commercial buildings, existing homes, existing commercial buildings, and all new construction per se. Do you know if Wisconsin Department of Energy is going to start doing that or pushing that here in Wisconsin here anytime soon, or do they have any thoughts or projections that they are going to?
Kevin, go ahead with your answer.
Sure. So HERS raters, also often with ResNet, do a lot of the energy rating, especially of newer homes, so new construction. So I would say that HERS ends up being done a little bit more commonly to rate a home. They do it, for those who are unfamiliar, and kind of oftentimes a little bit of a different numbers, zero or sometimes negative to 130, with the higher number being worse on your carbon emissions of your property. And so in Wisconsin, that designation is not as common for existing homes. Instead, many energy assessors are trained in with an organization called the Building Performance Institute, or BPI. That's what Focus on Energy really encourages energy assessors like our team to have. But again, it is pretty common in the new construction world, especially, again, new and renewed federal tax credits for more energy efficient or even zero carbon homes from the Inflation Reduction Act. So you'll hear more about it, certainly, but I would say probably more in the new construction world.
There you go, Jared. Thank you for calling. Chad in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Chad.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So my windows, my house is built in 1983, and the windows are original to the house, in desperate need of replacement. And I have, in fact, purchased windows for the entire house, which are scheduled to be installed later this month. My question is there anything I can do to take advantage of any programs or credits available under the Inflation Reduction Act?
Yes and no. So there is a renewed existing tax credit that technically expired last December that they have renewed for this year, but it capped out for windows at about $200. It is called the Section 25C, or Residential Energy Efficiency Tax Credit. But that tax credit is about to grow a fair amount starting next year. It's going to be up to 30% of the cost of improvements, up to $1,200 or $600 for all windows. So in your case, were those same windows to be installed not this coming month, but in January, instead of $200 federal tax credit, you could get a $600 one. Now, in theory, if you also got an energy assessment and it showed that getting windows, and probably with other improvements too, would reduce your utility bill by 20% or more, you could also get rebates on that as well, because again, it is tied to how we get your home to there, not what specific improvement anybody's trying to push. In general, I will say windows are a little bit lower on the list of things that we recommend, but if you've already done your attic, you've already done your basement, you've already made your home more energy or less leaky, or you have other really good reasons to replace windows. They're falling apart. They don't work well. Maybe they have lead paint, although I'm not worried about that based on the year you passed it or you built, had to build. Then windows can make a lot of sense. But I would say look at other things first, too, if your prime concern is energy savings.
And again, and this might be a backwards way of doing it, but I imagine he could still get a home energy audit.
Yes, absolutely. At least know what next year should be prioritizing.
Yeah, and that would give him some ideas about what to prioritize. And might want to wait to put those windows in, depending on what a home energy audit showed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something to think about, Chad. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. John in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, yes, thank you. We have a house built in 1965, and a couple years ago, we replaced our old oil furnace with a high-efficiency propane furnace, and of course, that vents out the side of the house, which has been working fine. But when the contractor put it in, he did not put in a second pipe for drawing air in through the side of the house. He said for a house our age, it probably wasn't necessary. I suspect it was just, you know, the extra labor to kind of work around some obstructions. But anyway, it's always kind of bothered me that we don't have an intake coming from outside the house for that furnace.
Yeah. Chad?
Right. Yeah. So, excuse me, that it is true that it really should have that fresh air intake. And there are some unintended consequences that can result from pulling the air from the home for combustion. You know, the typical home performance assessment would not necessarily do everything that I'd want to see done to test. I mean, it is going to give you a lot of the information we need to know to help with a recommendation on that. But I might recommend, pulling in a knowledgeable HVAC contractor in conjunction with an HP assessment to really look carefully at that. Kevin may have some more ideas on this topic, but that's how I would handle it.
Yeah. Kevin?
We do see this periodically, and in fact, I saw one earlier this morning on that very topic where the air is coming from inside the house. And this was, again, how it was done for so many furnaces for a long time. Basement air, in many cases, that's where it probably was funneled through to help the combustion gases leave the house. On an older furnace, it would go up a chimney. On a somewhat newer one, it would go up those white PVC pipes to seal combustion. Again, I do also prefer that they have the intake and the outtake. Partially because imagine your home is like a straw that you have your finger over the top of one of it. The water is not going to come out, or air in this case, if the air can't leave. But if your furnace is sucking in outside or inside air and then it's blowing out the outside, you're creating that pressure imbalance that's going to suck in outside, in often cases colder air, into the house, but not in a controlled way. It could be done in your basement. It could be done in other parts of your home. That pressure imbalance can help make that house feel more drafty than it should. And so there may be other reasons. Again, I would defer to the heating person who has been in your home to weigh in on that. But it is something that we like to see are those two white PVC pipes.
Yeah, there you go, John. Thank you for calling. Mary in northwestern Wisconsin, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Mary.
Hello. What is a good resource for a solar installation for a municipality such as a town? Where do I start?
I would say that solar is probably like any other one, and then Chad may have more on this, but getting a chance to talk to a couple of different installers, and there's like Renew Wisconsin is an association that represents many of them statewide. Chad?
Yeah, so Mary, would this actually be for the municipality? Did I understand that correctly?
And yes.
And so you're, say, on the council or something like that, and or work for the city?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking earlier about various ways to help with tax credits, and I don't know if Kevin knows anything about this with respect to some of the new legislation, but one of the downfalls of the original solar incentive package that was passed back, 12 years ago, right after Obama was elected, was that those 30% rebates were only to private homeowners and basically anyone that paid taxes, because it was a tax credit. So if you are a municipality, you don't pay federal taxes, so you're not eligible for a tax credit. And that was true also for many, say, churches, religious institutions that aren't paying taxes. So the workaround on this has been that there are groups of investors that essentially help to lease the equipment to the municipality or, say, to a religious institution, and they are selling you the equipment or leasing it to you at a discount, in effect, recapturing the bulk of that credit and giving it back to that municipality, whatever, to allow this to happen. Now, I would like to believe, but I haven't read it anywhere yet, that the newer legislation might address this particular, deficiency, because obviously we want to incentivize local governments and county, state, all this, to be able to benefit from our national investment in a greener power grid and economy. So it could be that some of the answers to this are in the legislation that's still being kind of, you know, ironed out. But if not, there are some other avenues. And there are some people that I might be able to connect you to off air that did exactly this for some of the folks in Dane County that I'm familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you just go online to Chad's Design Build, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. There's an online form, and if you fill it out, I'll get back to you.
Yeah, all right. And Kevin has something to add.
I would point out that Chad is absolutely right on that, but it is one of the new pieces in the Inflation Reduction Act. It was a big issue where if you didn't pay federal taxes, churches, schools, charities, et cetera, you weren't able to benefit from the solar tax credit. But it is going to change now. Starting next year, there will be a new what they call direct pay option. So in lieu of the tax credit, it will allow you to get the equivalent to help reduce it. Starting in 2023, for nonprofit organizations, private nonprofits, public schools, faith-based organizations, local and state governments, tribal governments, and rural electric cooperatives. We're still waiting on the IRS on some details, but it will make it easier.
There you go, Mary. So that's that's worth a look. Yeah, that probably a yay from Mary. Thank you very much for calling. That was a good point to be bringing up. Well, Patrick, who's driving to Waupaca at the moment. Patrick, hello.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you for taking my call. I'm in the process of rehabbing an old one-room schoolhouse, and the original heating system was a wood-burning furnace. And so I'm, in a sense, starting from scratch. And so I'm wondering what's the best direction to go in terms of putting heating in an old brick building that was built around the turn of the last century.
How big is the schoolhouse?
That's a good question. I would say it's probably about 40 by 50, 60 feet.
Okay, a pretty good size.
2,400 square feet, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, the systems that we've been talking about today, heat pumps, things like that. I mean, those are definitely potential candidates. I mean, depending on what the, basement access is in the building, the ductless systems that we've also talked about, some of those might be able to be installed around the building. I mean, there are a variety of options that are efficient and, carbon neutral a heating HVAC specialist would be able to recommend. But I don't see any reason why you wouldn't be able to put in a top-of-the-line heating and cooling system. And then there's clearly an opportunity potentially to do some improvements to the thermal envelope of that building, whether it's air sealing or potentially adding some insulation. Of course, we always do have to be careful when we're altering an older building. We don't want unintended consequences. But again, if you're working with a qualified specialist in that area, you can explore some options that will also make whatever system you put in operate more efficiently and effectively to keep the occupants comfortable.
But again, there would he not have to, for incentives, would he have to have, maybe through Focus on Energy or something, have a home energy inspector?
Oh, yes, and I'm sorry, I didn't say that, but you're correct, Larry. I mean, I would recommend getting that home performance evaluation of the building so that you can get some good information on what might be recommended. And that addresses the envelope of the building, but it's also, of course, looking at the heating and cooling systems and all the inputs to be able to help you improve that structure. So absolutely. Yeah.
Brad emailed, has a question that I wondered about myself at one point. Is there a point where it makes sense to build new, a passive net zero level versus upgrading an older home, which I spent a lot of money upgrading?
This is always the question that we have. I mean, we have this conversation daily with our prospective clients. Often remodeling and improving an older home is more expensive than, just building something that's brand new and that has done everything right from the beginning. You know, when you're getting into retrofitting, you're having to pay to tear out the old stuff and to integrate safely and properly with the old systems, or maybe tear out those systems and replace them entirely. You're having to deal with hazardous materials often, whether it's asbestos or lead, and that all has to be done professionally and safely so as not to harm the workers and the occupants. There are just many issues. But if you have a building that has some integrity and has some attributes that are worth saving, then it's a choice you might make to improve it. I mean, that's how I make my livelihood. We don't build new homes. We only improve old ones. But sometimes people decide it's better just to walk away from that home they're in and find a new one, whether it's an old home that is better suits their needs, that they don't have to renovate substantially, or just build an entirely new structure. So it's a great question.
Tom emailed, there's no gas vent to the outside for the gas stove where he rents. So he's got a gas stove, but there's no vent. So he checked with the city of Madison, and apparently this is okay and meets the city's code. So he figures he's going to have to inhale gas fumes of the gas stove. And he wonders what can be done about this. Any recommendations that you have?
Well, I don't know, Kevin, if you want to comment on that.
Well, in general, I never like to see a combustion device just entering into the home, whether it's a dryer or a space heater or a stove. And so my very first thing I would look to is say, how are we adequately venting this? Now, a kitchen range hood that might be set to continuous mode can certainly have part of it. or it's possible we're looking into electric devices instead. Gas stoves are treated a little bit differently than water heaters or space heaters or things of that nature, dryers. But it is something that, and Chad mentioned this earlier, combustion devices can have impacts on your air quality in your home. And it's why we often put air quality monitors in people's homes for up to a week to track levels of carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, particulate matter. We want to make sure that people are okay, because it's more than just the energy savings. It's how we're living our life.
Yeah. So how would Tom be able to, let's say he wants to, well, maybe I should check the levels in my home. Again, what's the device, and can they be rented, or do you purchase one, or what?
You can sometimes buy them off of things like Amazon, but it's probably cheaper to just work with a local company that does air quality testing. In fact, if you work with an energy assessor that is working with Focus on Energy, we are required to do combustion safety tests of your combustion appliances, your water heater if you have one, your furnace if it's not sealed combustion, your oven stove. All those sort of things. We want to make sure that you're okay. Every time I go into a home, I'm wearing a carbon monoxide detector. So I, for my safety, let alone the homeowner, know what we're going into. And if there's a concern, we let people know right away. But you can get those air quality tests if you want to learn more about things like radon, particulate matter, volatile organic chemicals, VOCs, or even just, am I getting enough oxygen? Or is it too much carbon dioxide? Do I just need more ventilation in the home?
And I would recommend that anyone listening to this program, if you have gas combustion appliances in your home, you should have carbon monoxide detectors there that are permanent, because it's one thing to do the one-time testing that we do when we do home performance tests. But, if you've got a leak or you have something that starts to malfunction, you want to know about it. And often, of course, natural gas has a scent added to it, so it can be detected. But if you have improper combustion, that can lead to problems, and you may not smell it. So, these are just good things that we should all do to make sure that we're safe in our homes.
And a last quick question. Solar panels fastened to an asphalt shingle roof, are there concerns about possible roof leaks? And there are ways to attach those.
Yeah, there are different systems used by different installers, but certainly you want to make sure that you have a roof with good integrity. You wouldn't want to put a solar panel or an array of solar panels on top of a roof that's going to need to be replaced in the next 5 years or 10 years even, because it's expensive to have them removed and reinstalled.
Chad, Kevin, thank you both very much for being with us today. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot, and I think our listeners did as well. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chad Spade is the owner of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison. Kevin Kane is the chief economist and co-founder of Green Homeowners United in Milwaukee. And, oh, by the way, full disclosure, we should mention Chad's Design Build is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors, so we appreciate that as well. Tomorrow, it's Garden Talk already. Lisa Johnson from UW Extension will be back to take your gardening questions. That's Friday from 11 to 12:30, and then the first hour plays on Saturday morning at 6. Stay with us. Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.